May it please the court, my name is Dan West. My bar number is 27573. Along with my firm, we have the pleasure of representing the grandparents in this case, who are the appellants, Roger and Antonia Medina. The procedural history is here is real important. The grandparents, my clients, were awarded grandparent visitation in September of 2008. The reason that's important, that date, is because that was entered after In Re the Interest of CA, the Colorado Supreme Court case that is at issue in this case. And why that's important is we have to assume that in September of 2008, the trial court applied CA appropriately and granted my client's grandparent visitation. Shortly thereafter, in fact, within the year, mother's new husband, stepfather, or who I call father, filed a petition to adopt the child, the subject child. My clients, thinking that they're trying to get rid of this grandparent visitation order, intervened in that case and asked that they and objected to it to the extent it would cut off their grandparent visitation. The court denied that, relying on the Aragon case, saying this adoption will not affect your grandparent visitation rights, which I agree with, and I think that's the accurate interpretation. Nevertheless, 8 months later, we have a hearing to terminate the grandparent visitation brought by the parents, and I think it's real significant that the motion was brought by the parents. As I've stated in my brief, I don't believe the analysis in the CA case applies to this case. Most assuredly, one filed less than a year after original grandparent visitation in compliance with CA was entered. That might be different. That analysis might be different if it was the grandparents who came in and said, I want to expand our visitation. That's not what happened. The parents brought a motion to terminate the grandparent visitation order. And while that's important is because if the grandparents were asking for more parenting time, they're further depriving the parents of their right to choose who they have contact with. But that's not the case. That issue was already decided in September of 2008. I've always analyzed these cases as a limited government issue. The state shouldn't intervene with a fit parent's right to the care and custody and control of their child, absent compliance with due process. Here, the state already found under CA that they could intervene back in September of 2008. My clients didn't ask that the state intervene any more than that. They already did. Then the parents come back and ask to terminate it. To apply CA in those situations is to basically say, anytime the parents want, they can continue to file these motions to terminate grandparent visitation that was previously ordered under CA and file motion after motion and say, grandparents, prove it again. And that's what they did here, basically. The court required my clients to prove it again. They'd already proved it in September of 2008. I think with respect to that, you have to look at the deprivation we're talking about here. We're not talking about a custody case where non-parents are coming in and asking for custody or non-parents are coming in and asking for guardianship. They came in and asked for a very limited deprivation of the due process right that the parents absolutely do have to grandparent visitation, and they were given it in September of 2008. But that's a far less deprivation than, say, asking for custody or guardianship, and I think that's important.
So, West, why do you say that the fact that mother's husband adopted the child doesn't mean that you can re-litigate this issue?
I think you can relitigate the issue. I think they can file because 19.1.117 says you can file a motion to change grandparent visitation anytime it's in the best interest of the child. What I'm saying is that you can't apply CA in that second determination. But yes, certainly anytime there's been a change of circumstances, the grandparent visitation order can be changed so long as it's in the best interest of the child. What I'm simply saying is the factors in CA, when you come back on a motion filed by the parent to terminate that, do not apply.
Why?
Well, I thought I made that argument, but I'll try to make it again. In September of 2008, when they're granted grandparent visitation, the trial court found,
let me ask it this way. What right has changed if a parent has the fundamental right to make care custody decisions? Why would that change, that right change, a year later?
Well, because the state has already sought fit to inject itself in that decision, and they already made that determination. And frankly, it somewhat goes down to the second issue that's on appeal here too, is that we're relitigating stuff that was already litigated. And I don't believe that...
But you said you could relitigate.
You can file a motion to the extent it's in the best interest of the child, but what we're talking about is who has the burden of proof in that subsequent motion.
But what right has changed as far as the parents?
The right hasn't changed, but what you're doing, if you look at the MJK case, what that was kind of goes to my point I was about to make too, is that when a court orders an initial grandparent visitation, there's a split in the states, and some states say we won't even grant grandparent visitation unless we find that the parent's unfit, or if in absence of visitation there'd be harm to the child. Our Supreme Court has rejected that standard. So I would suggest to you we have a little bit more of a liberalized view of granting third-party visitation. And I know I'm not answering your question. I'm going to get there. So we've looked at it more of a liberalized view. Now, MJK said once you grant custody to a non-party, that right no longer applies, that due process right. I don't think I'm arguing that the due process right doesn't apply to a parent who has had a grandparent successfully receive an order of grandparent visitation, but what I'm going to suggest to you, because the state has already intervened in that case and already decided that despite moms being against granting grandparent visitation, the court found that that presumption that due process requires, the presumption of the parent's right to do what is in the best interest of the child, was overcome by clear and convincing evidence. How can you say then that 8 months later from now, I'm going to go and file the motion again, and oh, grandparents, you're going to have to...
Well, don't we have now a new step-parent?
Yes, and could
does he not have the full rights that a biological parent has now?
And that is a good point. And so now do we look at the stepfather who's now the father, and now we have to look at his wishes and start that over again? I would suggest to you that that's not what the court decided in this case. They were looking at mother, not at the father. But I agree that that's a
mistake. But it was a changed circumstance with mother now saying, we have a new dad for child.
And if the court had said that we have a change of circumstances, and because of that, and I think it's in the best interest of the child, that no more grandparent visitation be allowed, that would be one thing, but that's not what the court found. The court found that my clients failed to meet their burden of proof to overcome a presumption in the parent's favor. And I would suggest to you that once the state intervened in this, that presumption was no longer applicable. It was the parents asking to change an order of the court. They should hold that burden. That's what Title 13 is very clear upon. Talk to you briefly about, and this is one of the things that I always think oral argument is helpful on, and it's somewhat, you look at it from a different perspective after filing a brief several months ago. And the issue with respect to allowing in evidence that predated the September of 2008 order is essentially a res judicata argument, is if you're going to rely on evidence that was already there in September of 2008, that issue has already been litigated successfully by the grandparents. And so I would suggest to you there's a res judicata issue. The parents on appeal argue that, well, grandparents got the right to argue all that stuff too. I mean, they got to argue what happened before September of 2008. That was only in response to what they were doing. And if you look at how the court conducted the proceeding, the parents went first, which I think was the right thing. The parents should go first, but they should have also had the burden of proof, which the court didn't do. Parents also cite the Ross case for the fact that you can look at evidence that predated to the extent it reflects on the current situation. That might be the case if 2 or 3 years had passed, but this was 8 months. 8 months had passed since the original order was entered. The same goes for some facts about the gang affiliation of one of the uncle, or I believe it was an uncle, had an impact, and the court said, trial court said, well, that certainly impacts on a 10-year-old. Well, that also would have impacted on the child when he was 9 years old when the original grandparent visitation was ordered. And I don't think this is harmless error, because the court did rely on lots of evidence that predated the September 2008 order to deny or to terminate grandparent visitation. And you'd have to be a mind reader to say, Well, if you forget all this, would this be enough? We can't get in the judge's in the judge's head and figure out why he did that. But again, I do not think, and I think it's important that this due process right absolutely applies. There's no question that due process applies at the initial determination. But once the state gets involved, thereafter, when the parents are the one that bring the action, that due process, at least the fundamentals of CA, do not apply. I still think they have the right to the care and custody and control of their child, but they carry the burden of proof. And that 19.1.1.17, you basically have to rewrite the whole statute to say that that's not the case, because it says the court can enter a new order any time that the best interest of the child provides. I'll reserve the rest of my time. I appreciate it.
May it please the court, my name is Lauren Hulse and I represent the appellee, the mother Jessica Burton in this case. This is my first oral argument, so I apologize in advance if I appear nervous. The Colorado Supreme Court stated in the case in the adoption of CA that a dispute between parents and grandparents regarding grandparent visitation is not a contest between equal. This case is about upholding the standard and preserving the fundamental rights to the care, control, and custody of their children. This case is about securing Ms. Burton's fundamental liberties as a fit mother to choose whether it is in her best interest to associate for the child to associate with his grandparents or not. Today, I request the court affirm the trial court's ruling for the following reasons. First, a parent's constitutional right should apply at both initial hearings and modification hearings. You shouldn't have to lose your fundamental rights at a modification hearing. And secondly, to address Mr. West's concern about parents relitigating the case, claim preclusion or res judicata principles are appropriate safeguards for ensuring that the parents do not abuse the legal process. The Colorado
Council, how would you propose that we say here that claim preclusion and
they do not apply because of the different facts that came up in those 8 months? I think the important fact is there is a new father, the adoptive father. He spent a substantial time testifying, so it's not up for the appellate court to decide how the trial court weighed his testimony.
Is he not already in the...
I am not sure if he was or not, Your Honor. He probably was, given that it was 8 months earlier. He didn't testify at the first hearing, though. So he ended up being the adoptive parent. I think the other big issue too was a therapist was seen after the case was originally heard, and the therapist had confirmed suspicion that there was drug use in the grandparents' house.
Wouldn't that have been...
They brought up the drug use, but it was just the credibility between the two parties, is my understanding. I wasn't at the first hearing.
The principle is, though, that you can't get a second bite at the apple. That's the principle. So you've got to present all the evidence you've got at the time. And could not the therapist have been employed for the September 08 hearing and also have examined the child?
I think the therapist could have been. The important detail afterwards was that the child had been doing bad in school as well. They didn't get the therapist to see what was going on at grandparents' house. The therapist was employed because he had started to... I think he got suspended from school and then he got expelled. He had to go to a new school. His grades were decreasing, and this had all occurred after the grandparents' rights had been granted the first time.
Sorry, I interrupted.
That's okay. I think, though, that the important issue is that res judicata should be the standard rather than to deny the fundamental rights of parents in a modification hearing. If a court presumes that a fit parent's initial decision is in the best interest of the child, it follows that all of the parent's subsequent decisions regarding grandparent visitation should also be presumed to be in the best interest, unless the court later finds that a parent is unfit. Mrs. Burton was never found unfit. She was given sole decision-making from the beginning. She was given sole custody. The grandparents were the supervisors for biological father. And I think one of the reasons a parent's fundamental right to the care, control, and custody of her children is so important is because the court does not know the daily events in the child's life and all the needs of the child. The parent is best suited to know this. And in modification cases, the fit parent is best suited to determine how visitation is affecting the child. Is there a change in the visitation that's to the detriment of the child? And whether the child is better off, you know, with the grandparents in his life or not.
Let's talk about the burden of proof, because I think that's really the issue here. Whose burden of proof should it be on a second motion like this?
The burden of the proof should still be on the grandparents, but they can also bring up the issue of res judicata. If parents are not bringing in any new issues, then the grandparents can say this should be precluded, this case should be dismissed. There are no new issues.
So the parent doesn't have, even though the parent is the moving party who traditionally has the burden of proof, that factor should be disregarded because of the fundamental right to care, custody, and control of the child.
Well, I think if the parent can prove that there are changes in circumstances, then those changes should be found. The court should still presume that those changes are in the best interest of the child, or not the changes, but the parent has decided based upon those changes that the best interest of the child is to modify grandparenting time or to terminate it.
So the parent would have the burden to go forward to establish it's in the best interest of the child to terminate grandparent visitation.
Could you repeat that question?
Well, mom in this case would have the burden to prove the change of circumstances would be in the best interest, and the grandparents would have to overcome that.
She would just have to prove that there's a change in circumstances.
Well, the statute requires best interest, doesn't it?
Right, but in the adoption of CA, the court said that in order to accommodate parents' fundamental rights, there had to be a gloss over that standard. And that gloss
she would have to show change of circumstances to say this is what I want. And the grandparents would then have the burden by clear and convincing evidance.
Correct, Your Honor. That's what
I mean. There's a presumption that she understands best interest. I don't think that relieves her of the burden of at least establishing that.
She does need to establish that there's a change in circumstances.
There's two different concepts here. One is the burden of coming forward with evidence. One is the burden of proof. They're two different things. The burden of coming forward with evidence usually lands on the moving party.
Right.
And so you're acknowledging that the mother has the burden, or the parents, I'm sorry, have the burden of moving forward to present some evidence, either of changed circumstances or that it's no longer in the best interest of the child. And then your position is the burden of proof, though, remains with the grandparents. Overcome that by clear and convincing evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that happened here. Like Mr. West said, the parents went first. They presented all of their facts. The new father, the adoptive father, got to testify. The therapist got to testify. So they presented their case first, and they came forth with evidence of why these changes would require that grandparents' time should be terminated.
You would agree that by mother going forward some evidence, that doesn't...
To come forth with some evidence?
Circumstances, best interests.
I would agree with that, because the court has already made an order. So in order for her to get that change, she has to show up to court and
show something.
Yes, and I think here she has shown that something.
Serve the fundamental right. The grandparents would then have to go forward with evidence, clear and convincing.
Right, that she is not acting in the best interest of the child, or that her determination is not in the best interest of the child. I think it's important to remember that this is a family law case, and visitation orders are rarely permanent. They're always subject to change because the circumstances of families are always changing and transforming. I think the judge made a good point in the case. You know, now the child's 10 and he sees this bag of grass. He's getting older. He's starting to realize what may be going on in grandparents' house. And so to hold that fit parents only have fundamental rights at an initial hearing, but they lose these rights as the years pass, seems illogical in a family law case. Although the court may sympathize with grandparents wanting to have a relationship with their child, this shouldn't override the parents' fundamental liberties under the Due Process Clause. In the case at hand, just to reiterate again, the court did not find that there was a claim preclusion, and opposing counsel did not raise this issue during the second hearing. And I think I already went over many of the facts that had changed, especially the fact that the child was adopted. There was an indication of the drug use, and the child had been just recently diagnosed with an adjustment disorder. Furthermore, his mother had testified that his grades had dropped after the first order was entered, and that he had got suspended from school, and also that the relationship between her and grandmother had completely deteriorated. Given that parents have fundamental rights and grandparents have statutory rights, that should be a consideration as to how this visitation is going with the parties. As a side note, this probably doesn't matter, but another concern that has arisen since the hearing is that the biological father is now out of jail, and that he will probably see the child during the grandparents' time with the child.
Is that in the record?
No, that's not in the record. We just found this out a couple weeks ago. Okay. Okay. In conclusion, the court should affirm the trial court's ruling and application of the standard set forth in the case in the adoption of CA. Furthermore, claim preclusion or res judicata is the appropriate standard to prevent relitigation of parents. This case is fairly straightforward. Before I stop, I just want to address a couple of points. The grandparents cite the MJK case. I think this is distinguishable here. In the MJK case, grandparents had a guardianship over the child. So mother had terminated her rights in effect through the guardianship. Furthermore, the argument in MJK is about a stable environment. Here, it's a little different to say we're gonna take away 1 week and a month of grandparents' time compared with, you know, going from grandma as your custodian every day back to mother as your custodian every day. Once a parent gives up their rights, then their fundamental right that applies in Troxel and in the adoption of CA should not apply in a guardianship case. So I think it's apples and oranges. Also, about the predated evidence, I think that in a family law case, it's almost always necessary. Otherwise, it's just a vacuum. You know, you have to build up on the case and see what's happened over time. I don't think the judge could just consider only new facts without getting the context of the full family history. So if the court has no further questions, I believe I'm finished. Thanks.
I would like to follow up on the questions with respect. I think what you're suggesting, Judge Furman, is somewhat of a bifurcated proceeding. And I think even under that, why I would argue that the burden of proof on both coming forward and on the preponderance of the evidence would be to the parents on a modification that they brought. I do think we would still prevail if this court adopted a bifurcated proceeding, because if you read the court's order, it is clear that he was holding the burden of proof on both coming forward and everything else on my clients. And so if you think that a bifurcated proceeding, which I think some other states would follow that, would be consistent about that, it still should be remanded back to the trial court for proceedings that say, one, the parents have to prove that there has been a change of circumstances, and then the grandparents would therefore hold the burden to overcome the presumption in their favor to the extent that the parents were able to prove a change of circumstances. That's not what happened here.
Dispute in the father has adopted the child, at least that factor is stipulated, isn't it?
It is, but it is, Your Honor, and that is a change, but that's not the what the court trial court did. And I understand that. And there certainly is some changes in circumstances. And we and I can't argue the facts. I mean, the facts are whatever the trial court found them to be. And certainly that is a change of circumstance. But that's not how the trial court looked at it. They held it as our burden of proof from the get-go. So I still think that you can, even though I would dispute that the bifurcated proceeding should be the standard, even if that's the case, I still think the trial court, this court needs to remand it back to the trial court.
Well, practically, why? What's different? If the ultimate burden is on your clients, what is the difference?
Well,
Mother filed the motion, the court held a hearing, certainly considered evidence. You dispute some of that, but sure. Considered evidence. So I think there's record support to say now you have to overcome a clear and convincing evidence burden.
Well, because
so I don't
that,
see, I mean.
That. I'm sorry, Judge, I apologize. That gets you into reading the judge's mind. I don't know that the judge said, gee, there's a change of circumstance. The order doesn't say there was a change of circumstance. The judge was looking at the entire circumstance, including all this predated evidence. So I don't think this court should get into, well, we're not going to remand it because there clearly is a change of circumstance. I think that's reading too much into it. I want to make one quick point. Two quick points. One, unfitness is not the standard here. CA made that clear. We don't have to prove unfitness. Second point is the Troxell decision. If you read Justice Stevens, and I think it was a concurring opinion, but one of the things he brought up in there is that the fact that we have to litigate over these issues could affect the best interest of the child, which was why, and it's kind of applying it in a reverse situation here. If you apply the standard that the trial court applied, which is that CA always applies, you're going to get a situation where a parent can file motion after motion, maybe the trial judge changed, the divisions changed, file another motion and say, grandparents, prove it again. That in and of itself, according to Justice Stevens, in the Troxell case, could be harmful to the child. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into account. And I could talk here for another 39 seconds, but I don't think that would be helpful. So I appreciate your time today.
Thank you both for your arguments today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course. That concludes the arguments scheduled for today.